In tonight's shiur in Parshas Miketz, brought to you by the Weinblatt family of Ramat Beit Shemesh, Lili Nishmas Yaakov Yitzhak Ben Chaim. Sedra starts out, Ve'im Miketz Shnasayim Yamim Farach Olei Minei Omed Al Yehor. So what's these 2 years? Chazal tell us these 2 years were the extra 2 years that Yosef HaTzadik had to stay in prison because he approached the Sar Mashkim to get him out. He mentioned 2 words, Zechartani Vizgartani, and connected this, he had to stay an extra 2 years. So we spoke a little about this at the end of last week's shiur. As the Mefarshim asked, what was the terrible about Hishtadlis? You know, he also had to make some Hishtadlis, so he put a little effort in. He spoke to the Sar Mashkim. What was so terrible? He had to be punished in these extra 2 years. We mentioned something last week. I'd like to share a couple of other ideas. The Chazon Ish, he brings this, and he says that bitachon has to be, when a person that hishtadlus has to be something reasonable. Okay, the moment a person does something hishtadlus wise that is illogical, not something that's not reasonable, that shows an element of yush, like he's given up. Like picking for straws or something, the expression, right? It's like, what am I going to do? I'll try anything. You know, he's desperate, okay? So there's no room for desperation, right, when it comes to Yiddish. You have to be talking to Kodesh Baruch Hu. You got to do your Yishtadlis. But you don't do things that show you're desperate. That shows you're lacking bitachon. So Meili says, had he done normal Yishtadlis, Hashem wouldn't have done anything. But approaching this person, a Sar Mashkim, this haughty person, as the Chazal call him, Rehavim, right? He's not going to say anything. He's not going to, you know, go to Paro for you. As in fact, that's what happened. He didn't go to him, right? Because that showed. So his problem was that he showed desperation by turning to the Sar Mashkim, and such Yishtadlis wasn't good. Norm Yishtadlis would have been okay, but such Yishtadlis is no good, and that's why he was punished. So this Chazon Ish, the idea that. We heard this Shabbos, Rav Left mentioned Ashir, he didn't know who the name of, but the problem of the Hishtadlis of the Sar Mashkim was that he asked him to remember him in like 3 days from now, right? He says in 3 days, you know, you're going to be taken back to your post, and then I want you to make sure you tell Paro, etc. So that was on the third day. So Mele, what was his problem? Yosef's chet, so to speak, was that why the third day? What about the first and second day? In other words, he kilu said, "Oh, the third day you're gonna, you know, go out and save me. When Hashem can't save you in day number one and day number two, he has to save you in day number three. He has to. Oh, okay, kilu, nothing I can do about today and tomorrow. You know, in the first couple of days, but after that, I want you to go. Why Hashem can't save you today? Can't save you tomorrow. We don't have to wait for the third day." So it ended up, there were 2 days over there, the first 2 days, that he didn't, you know, think that maybe he can get saved, and that bitachon, that maybe Hashem could save him already then. So can I get those 2 days? Yom Lashana, that's why he had to stay an extra 2 years in prison. It says in the Pasuk, is actually, Bar had the dreams with the cows, the lean cows, the fat cows, the lean cows ate the fat cow. And he actually doesn't relate to it when the Torah doesn't relate to it when he had the actual dream. But later, when Paro called Yosef and he related, you know, the dreams to him afterwards, he adds this pasuk, and he says that the lean cows ate the fat cows, v'tavona el kirbena, and they, you know, swallowed them up, and it said v'lo noda ki ba'ol el kirbena. But you couldn't see, you couldn't tell that they were, you know, they didn't, like the skinny ones got really fat because they ate these fat cows. No, they remained skinny. Umarehem ra kasher batchila. They remained skinny like they were to begin with. So this is, again, wasn't mentioned in the actual dream, but this is when it was repeated to Yosef, he added this point. So there's an interesting ha'ara that the Meshech Chochma says. He says that, you know, what happened over here? They had 7 years of plenty, okay? And then, all of a sudden, there was a famine, okay? But because of Yosef, you know, saved everything up, and Egypt was doing good, right? They had Yosef, you know, saving up all this food all these years, and now when it came to the years of famine, everybody was desperate for food, so everybody came to Mitzrayim for the food. So all of a sudden, from all over the place, the whole world, you know, came to Mitzrayim, giving them everything, all their money, to get some food. So here are the Egyptians that started off with being not such a, you know, rich nation, and they became like this huge, huge, you know, very, very wealthy nation. So they're like in cloud nine, like, yeah, you know, great, of course, you know, we're this great nation, whatever. So he said they didn't realize that why was this all? This was all for really the sake of Klal Yisrael. They think it's them, you know, it's not for them. It's all Kadosh Baruch Hu helping Klal Yisrael. Why? First of all, Hashem knew that they were going to end up being slaves in Egypt. How long? 210 years. So Hashem wanted them to be slaves to a rich nation, not to be to some, you know, slum, to work for some slum. You know, he wanted to be work for at least for a rich nation. That's number one. And of course, what happened when they left? Vinaslu at Mitzrayim, right? They cleaned them out totally of all their wealth. So we had the Bezos Mitzrayim. They cleaned them out of all their things. Had they had no money, nothing much to clean them out with. But Hashem wanted Bnei Yisrael to come out with great wealth, so he made them wealthy. How did he make them wealthy? By Paro having this dream. Oh, Yosef brings up Yosef, gets his great idea, save up the stuff, whatever. And here they thought, wow, they were living in a quote-unquote, pun intended, dream world. You know, wow, you know, look at us, we're so wealthy. Ah, it's not you, it's nothing. It's all for the sake of Klal Yisrael, so they can come out wealthy. And therefore, that's inherent in the pasuk as well, but that the lean cows, they began to be lean. They ate up these fat cows. They said, oh, okay, yeah, we're fat. Nah, in the end, what? They were lean as they were to begin with. In the end, they ended up a poor nation, right? Klal Yisrael cleaned them out when they left. They ended up clean, that they, like, declared nothing as it were to begin with. Similar idea, was a maisa with the noted Yehuda. There was once a musician, he was used to play the harp or whatever, and he was playing in this courtyard that was in between two rich people's houses. And so he used to play, and when he finished playing, these two rich men, you know, from each side, they each claimed that the harp player was playing for them. You know, Reuven said, oh, you know, play for me, you know. And Shimon says, no, what are you talking about? He's playing for me, back and forth. They wanted to solve the thing. Who is he really playing for? So they came to the Noda Behuda. Well, you know, great in Torah, but whatever. They came to the Noda Behuda. He said, we have an argument. I say he was playing for me. I was saying, back and forth. So the Noda Behuda says, wait a second. You want me to paskin over here? So he said, yeah. So he says, okay, wait. First, there's something called Demei Psak. You know, you have to, you know, pay. Rabbi's got to make a living also, you know. So he asks Reuven Shimon to, you know, pay him before he gives his psak, you know. Fine, so Reuven gives him money, Shimon gives him money. Okay, so now then the Noda Behuda says, okay, now you want to know who the harp player played for? He said, play for me. Took the money. So Mela, the same thing with Yosef. Right? Paro, you know, had this dream, right? So why did Paro have this dream? Paro had this dream for Yosef, right? So that Yosef should be able to come and interpret it and et cetera, to become the second in command. It was all for Klal Yisrael. I say everything in the bottom line, everything's for us, everything's for Klal Yisrael. Okay, next, share with you probably one of my most favorite words. Everybody has their favorite words. I'm sure I've said it in one context or another here, but again, I'll say it because of the chavivus. Right, so after Yosef interprets the dream, so he tells him exactly what's going to be, this, you know, the years of famine, etc., the years of plenty, years of famine, etc. And then Yosef concludes, and he says the following, V'ata yirei faro, ish navon v'chacham, v'yishisu al eretz Mitzrayim. So now, Pharaoh should find a person, a man that's Navon v'chacham, a very wise man, in order to place him over Mitzrayim, to, you know, take charge over here. So Rav Eliyahu Lapian Zatzal, he asks, he says, it's the wrong choice of words, right? What do we need? We need somebody who's good at what? At organizing, a good organizer, right? What does he have to do? We have all this food, you know, in the next 7 years. So you have to store it, you know, so that you'll have it for the years of famine. So you need a guy that's a good, or a manager, a good organizer, something like that. But why do you have to be a wise man? You don't have to be wise, you have to be smart. You just have to be able to, you know, or be organized, be a good. So what's a ish, and why did Yosef say we have to have an ish navon v'chacham? He says the Gevaltig Vort, which is a tremendous lesson in Musar. So he says that the human nature is, as we all know, that when people have plenty, they end up wasting. Right? It's a known thing, right? You have a lot of some things, you're not careful, you just use it, and a lot of goes to waste. Right? It's only when, you know, you don't have a lot, so then every little drop is precious. Okay? But when you have a lot, you tend to waste. That's human nature. So, Yosef knew, he said, look, we're gonna have 7 years of plenty, but because there's gonna be plenty, people aren't gonna, it's hard to save. Because, so much, come on, look at all the food coming all over the place. It's very hard to, you know, be careful of every little drop, but they have to be. Why? Because they have to save it for the 7 years of famine that are coming after that. But human nature is very difficult when you have so much to, you know, take it seriously, you end up just wasting. So therefore, Yosef said, you have to find a ish chacham, navon v'chacham, a very, very wise man, because you have to change the human nature over here. You have to have somebody that can, you know, put in the minds of people that, okay, you know, we have a lot, but we have to be careful. We have to save it as if it's the years of famine right now. Just like if we didn't have food, we, you know, be careful of every morsel. That's how we have to act, despite the fact that we have a lot. And even though nature would, you know, tend to make us be, you know, waste, but we can't. We have to treat it as if we have very little. And what it says, we have to look at the future. And now we have a lot, but we can't waste, because we're not going to have it if we waste it. So we have to act in a time of plenty as if it's a time of famine. That's very good. To have that happen, you need a person, a chacham and navon. So what's the lesson of Moses and Rebellion? He says, so too, when it comes to this world of Torah and mitzvahs, right? The same thing, we have shefa. We have, everywhere you turn, you can do mitzvahs. No problem, pick up a chumash, every word you, letters, a mitzvah, you know, left and right, tons and tons of mitzvahs. But because of that, unfortunately, people take it lightly. So because we have so much of it, big deal, I'll learn a little bit tomorrow, we'll have to learn today. Everywhere you turn, no problem, mitzvahs, mitzvahs, mitzvahs all over. Famous story with the Gra, when he was, for his dying, he picked up his tzitzis and he said, oh, you know, why are you crying? He said, look, for a few shekels, you know, you can, you don't see a mitzvah, derice or whatever, and where I'm going to now, you know, all the money in the world, you can't do any more mitzvahs. So here is a world of shefa. So, but what? A wise person doesn't just waste away his time and waste away. He says, but that's human nature, you know? We've got so much mitzvahs, why do I have to do so many? I'll pick and choose. No, treat it as if, you know, they say, like, you have only, you know, what if a person, Rahman's son, had like 1 hour to live, and that's it. You have to earn your olam hab in 1 hour. You'd go crazy and chapa rayin as much mitzvahs, you wouldn't waste a second. That's it. So a person should feel like he's in the time of quote unquote famine in Ruchni, as even though the mitzvahs are b'shefa. And that's how we can kona olam haba. I just like to give the mashal. Remember when I was a kid, I don't know, probably some, you know, probably guys probably don't know this, but there's a game called football. Okay? Now, this it's always hit me when I was a kid watch these football games, right, that there's something called timeouts. Right, that each team that the clock keeps, you know, ticking, but each team has a certain amount of timeouts, okay, and because you know they can stop the clock whenever they want, but they only get a certain amount of time. So it's when you see watch this game, the game's going and going and going. Finally, the last 2 minutes of the game, you know, the teams are, you know, they're okay. Well, we'll make a play and then we'll you know, say throw the catch. Okay, stop the clock, timeout. You know, and then okay, now they're playing the next play because they have to, you know, they get that one last next touchdown, you know, to win the game. And they're so careful about every second, you know, and quickly run out of bounds. You stop the clock again. And we kick it, you know. So I remember thinking as a kid, I said, wow, if they would play like this from the beginning of the game, you know, they win hands down. You know, why is it only the last 5 minutes? You know, every second count. You know? So some too, same thing. Like if we would treat every second, you know, in this world now as we live, it's not like you know, but treat it like this is it, my last second. Chaperein, that it would be, we'd win the game. Okay. So Paro told the Yosef that ein chacham v'navon kamocha. There's no, you want a wise person. There's no wiser person than you. So throughout generations, we've had our gdolim, which showed their wisdom, right? And especially in Piskei Torah, like we saw with the Noda Yehuda. So I'd just like to share with you a couple of maisim from Rav Dov Be'erish Meisels. I think it was the Rav of Lodz, if I'm not mistaken. And a couple of maisim which shows the wisdom of our gdolim. So once there was a poor, very poor Malamed. And he was heading home. They used to go away like for a half a year at a time between Chag and Chag. You know, they used to go teach some kids somewhere in some far off town. They used to come home only for the Chagim. Anyway, so they got paid at the end of the half 6 months, and they used to take their money. So this one Malamud was heading home, and he stopped at this inn from this rich man had this inn, and he stayed by him. So it was Erev Shabbos, and he asked the rich man if he could please hold on to his money, you know, his wallet, while he's, you know, for Shabbos. No problem, puts it away. So, just can imagine what happened, you know, next day. He says, thank you very much, can I have my wallet back? What wallet? You didn't give me any wallet. He goes, what do you mean? I gave you my wallet, all my money from this year, half a year, you know. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Lo yad v'rim me'olam, you didn't give me anything, back and forth. Anyway, so they went to this Rav Meisel's, and didn't Torah. So, yes, Rav Meisel, you know, felt right away that probably this, you know, the Malamed's in the right. But, okay, but it doesn't matter. You have to prove it, you know. So what is he going to do? No Eidim, no Star, no that. So how, you know, how is he going to... So he was, they're talking, and so he turns to this wealthy man, the innkeeper, and he says, you know, I couldn't help but notice you have this beautiful like gold watch, you know, coming out of your pocket, you know, chain in your pocket. So he says, yeah. So he says, can I look at that? Said, sure. Takes out the watch and he looks at it. So Meisel looks at the watch. Wow, what a beautiful watch. Phew, haven't seen a watch like this in years. He says, yeah, you know, feels good. Yeah, it's my expensive watch. She said, can I ask you a favor? I don't know, you can say no, but Would I be able to just show my wife this watch? She's really going to be impressed. She never saw a watch like this. Could I show it to my wife? She's just in the back room. Would you mind? She goes, sure, Rabbi, go ahead. No problem. So he goes, okay, good, thank you. So he goes to the back, and he takes the watch. Rabbi, he gives it to his wife. And he says, do me a favor. He says, quickly run to this inn, okay, and go to this inn. There's a woman who's going to be there, the innkeeper's wife, okay? And I want you to go to her and say, can you please give me the wallet that this Talmud Chacham, you know, gave over thing, and then say that, you know, her husband wants it, and to prove that, you know, it's you're not some person asking for the wallet, show his gold watch to her, and say, you'll see, he gave me your watch to show, this is, you know, he sent me, this is his watch, you see, right, this is his watch, and she'll, yeah, of course, my husband's watch, yeah, fine. So that's what she did, and showed him the watch, and said he'd like to have the wallet that was given to you, and else, yeah, fine, if he wants the wallet, good, takes it back, gives it to the Rav, and the rich man was, yeah. Next to him, I said, there was these two women that gave their, they used to have in those days, they didn't have markoves, have these, laundromats. So they used to have, the women used to wash laundry for people, you know, for pay. So there was this these two women, and they each gave the laundry woman, whatever, that did laundry, their laundry. Too big, each one gave this big basket. Fine. So what happened was, unfortunately, this woman was nifter, and the Yorshim were left with this laundry, and this whole thing of laundry, and didn't know, you know, what to do with it. So these two women came, and it was now this one big, you know, bundle of laundry, and one of the women said, yeah, this is my laundry. So the other woman said, what do you mean? It's not your laundry. It's my laundry also. It's half is mine and half of yours, you know. First one said, Kula Shali, and the second one said, no, Chetzi Shali, Chetzi Shalcha. So, back and forth, so they went to Rav Meisel's to solve the problem. So he came, what's the problem? He says, oh, this is my laundry, it's all my laundry. Second one says, well, it's not all, it's half mine, it's half is hers, back and forth. So he says, okay, I have to think about this, so just leave the laundry here. Come back in an hour. I just got to think about what, you know, how to decide over here. So fine. So the women left. As soon as they left, Meisel turns to the Rebbetzin and says, bring me some of our laundry in the hamper, you know. Or the clean laundry maybe would be better. Bring me the clean laundry. So she brings her a bunch of clothing. He takes it and he throws it in with this bundle that was in question. Some of his own laundry also. Put it in. Muffled it all up. Put it in the thing. Fine. Then, an hour later, the women come back. He turns to the woman who said it's all hers and said, now again, you said this whole thing of laundry is yours? She says, yes, it's all mine. He says, well, do me a favor. Can you please check to make sure? Maybe, you know, real life, make sure it's your... So she goes, yeah, no problem. So she walks over to laundry, and Kilu, you know, she's looking through it. Is there? He goes, yeah, yeah, it's all mine, it's all mine. Yeah, I told you, it's all mine, it's all mine. So then he turns to the other woman and says, now you said half is yours, right? She says, yeah. She says, can you please, you know, choose which is yours, half is yours? And she goes, sure, no problem. Sure enough, she goes over and starts picking out. She picked out exactly those pieces that were hers, and she left the pieces that belonged to the Rav and the other woman. So Mela, you knew who the right owner of the laundry was. The Chachma of our Gedolim. Okay. When the Yosef's brothers came to Egypt and met up with Yosef for the first time, so Yosef said, "Meraglim atem," right? You guys are spies. So they ask, why did he say they're spies? He could have said they're genavim or whatever. Why dafka did he pick to say that they're spies? Accuse them of being spies. So, say Yosef is very smart. Why? He wanted to make sure, for the time being, right, that the brothers don't know who he is. So he figured, if I'm going to stop and accuse them of whatever it might be, you know, they did this, they did that, was some accusation. So he's afraid that they would then go around and start, you know, speaking to people, you know, and say, you know, this guy, you know, in charge over here, the Mishnah Lamech, maybe he'll accept a bribe, and how much money do you think, and whatever. And inevitably people would start saying, nah, he's not going to accept money, you know, this guy used to be an Eved, and ended up being, he became the, you know, second in command, and then they're going to say, Eved, and, well, you know what, maybe this is Yosef, and they might find out. So Yosef had a beautiful plan. He says, I can avoid all the problems. All I'll do is I'll accuse them as being spies. Why? Because the last thing a spy wants to do is start schmoozing with people. Right? If he schmoozes with people, then for sure he's a spy. He's going around to people asking him that. Right? That's the worst thing a person that is accused of a spy can do. Start schmoozing with people. So in order to stop them from going around, the best thing was to accuse them of being spies. Okay. After they got to Egypt and then they left, and Yosef put the money back in their bags, and Yosef said that he took Shimon in custody, and he said, you can't come back unless you bring Binyamin. So eventually they got back. They said, okay, we have to bring Binyamin, and Yaakov said, nothing doing, etc. And Yaakov made a comment. Says in Perek Mem Gimel Pasuk Vav, he says, "Vayomer Yisrael, lama harayosim li lagid laish aod lachemach." He says, "Why did you do this? Why did you harayosim lashon hara? Why did you cause this evil to me? You know, by telling this guy that you had his little brother. Now you have to bring your little brother Binyamin. I don't want you to do that, etc. Why did you do this?" So there's a midrash that goes as follows: "Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina." Me'olam lo amar Yaakov Avinu davar shel batala elakan. Yaakov Avinu never said anything that was batala, like something wrong, so to speak, except for here. Why? Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, ani yosech lamliches beno b'mitzrayim, behu omer lama yerosim li. So what is he complaining about? Oh, why is this doing bad? What bad? He says, I'm busy here, Hashem says, you know, making Yosef the king in Egypt and getting everything, you know, set up for the whole family and everything. And you're saying, Hamlama Harayosim. In other words, fortunately, people, you know, we don't see the whole picture. It might look like at this moment things aren't good or bad or whatever, but there's nothing bad, not a rod, there's no bad here. Everything's for the good. Rav Shach, that's all. Once there was a man who was much broken, he had a very tough life, and he came to him, you know, as a broken man, and Rav Shach, you know, wanted to give him chizuk, and he says, you know, what can I tell you? He says, a person doesn't know really what's the best thing for him. What might look like really bad matzav, you know, in the end it might not be that way. We just don't realize, we don't see the whole picture. So he gave the mashal like you have a child, you know, that's a little baby, and you put him in the bath and he's dirty. So the kid's screeching and crying, yeah, let me out of here, right? He doesn't realize that the mother's doing trying to help the kid, want to make him clean and smell nice or whatever. But he thinks he's being tortured, right? So that's how we act like these children. So Rav Shach told him that, let me tell you, Maisa Shaya, he said, with me, myself, personal experience. He was sorry, Yechze, as they say. He says, when I was a bachur, I was learning in Slutsk. And I was one of the top bachrim, and whenever, you know, all the top bachrim, what happened when they got to the age of Shiduchim, so all the, you know, Chashav Balabatim, you know, they all wanted their daughters to marry a good top bachur. So they would look for the top bachurim, you know, to marry off to their daughters. So they would offer, you know, apartments and, you know, monies and things and big dowries and everything. And that's who these, you know, these bachurim used to, you know, get married to. Anyways, I was one of these top bachurim, but I didn't end up, you know, marrying some rich thing. What happened was the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, he was meshadech me to his niece. Okay? Now, he didn't buy me some big apartment, give me a big dowry. No, I didn't get any money. I didn't get an apartment. Where did I live? He put me up in his own house. And I was in his house, he had this one room, and in that room already was living one of his son-in-laws, okay, with his wife. And now he has now another son-in-law, so what do? They put up a mechitza, and put the, you know, make, split the room into two. So here was this little room, split into two now. I took one half with my wife, and his other, you know, chassan with his wife, and that's how we live. So he says, you have no idea how the bachurim, you know, they has this rachmanis on me. He says, oh, look at you, you know, nothing, you know, dowry. You could have had tons of money and you could have had a big house and whatever. And look at you, you have nothing, whatever. So, what can I say? First of all, you know, they were right. You know, I could have had all this. Well, the ma'aseh, that didn't really bother me. So all I wanted to do was sit and learn. I didn't care about these things. Well, the ma'aseh, you know, they had a point. You know. She said, what happened? The Second World War broke out. And the Nazis came in, and they took over Poland. And the Russians came in, and they took over Litha. And everybody that could ran away. You know, the danger, they ran away. So what happened? So all these, you know, these bachurim that married these from these wealthy homes, they had these big houses. They couldn't just pick up and go. How could they leave their big houses and this? It was hard for them. And unfortunately, they didn't pick up and go in time, and unfortunately, they paid for it with their lives. Me, on the other hand, no problem, pick up and go. Why not? I had nothing anyway, no money, no house, no that. I had to leave behind my house, nothing to leave. I didn't have anything. So really, there's no problem. So I got up and left. I ran to Vilna, from there to Eretz Yisrael, and Baruch Hashem, I was safe. I saved my life. So here, this, you know, these fancy houses and things, and you know that ended up causing their death. Whereas me, by having nothing, says that's what saved me. So he says the person doesn't realize, you know, things think, oh, bad months. You don't realize, so you don't know what's really bad, because in the end, mice, everything's for the good. Just to end off with a word from Hanukkah, since we're heir of Hanukkah. We say in the piyut, "Uminosar kankanim nasa nes lashoshanim bnei bina yemei shmona kavu shir nani." So they ask, "What's this that uminosar kankanim from the leftover of the pitchers?" Right, uminosar kankanim. That was a nes was made for us. What was this? What's this leftover pictures? What was it referring to? So the Taz brings an answer to the famous question, right? The famous Beis Yosef's question: why is Hanukkah celebrated for 8 days when the nace was only 7 days? Right? They had enough oil for one day; they didn't have enough oil for the other 7 days. So it was only a 7-day nace. So Hanukkah should have been only 7 days. I'm sure you're all familiar with that question. So the Taz answers, based on his bar, and he says, the way a Kodesh Baruch Hu works in this world is when he sends bracha, and sometimes a bracha through a nace, that it can only be chal if you have something, right? You have to have something to start with, and then Hashem takes that and develops it and makes it more and more. That's brachas lashon ribui, he makes it more and more, and a nace can only occur if you have something to start with. He says you can't have something from nothing, right? Hashem doesn't do a miracle if you don't have nothing to start with, right? So that's why, in fact, we're in one of the Siddhas Lamais with benching. Right? When a person benches, it says that you should have some bread on the table. So because you're benching, you want the bracha, so it has to be chal on something. If you have nothing, no bread on the table, then you can't, you know, get more. You have to have something to get more from. All right, so that's the yisod. So too over here, so that when they lit the menorah on the first day, if all the oil would have burnt, and they had enough for the first day, right? But if that would have burnt, and that would have been the end of it burnt, there couldn't have been a miracle now for the next 7 days. Because we said, in order to have a miracle, there has to be something to go on. So had they lit the first day and it would burn to nothing, then there couldn't have been any more miracles. So what happened? The Chasam Sofer says this. So what happened? The miracle was that the oil didn't burn to the bottom. Right? It should have, burned down to the end. It didn't burn down to the end. That itself was a miracle, and that was a necessary miracle, because with that, they were able to continue the miracle the next day, etc., because there always had to be some left over. Wouldn't be left over, and it couldn't be what to be challah, the miracle. So Mele, also the first day was a miracle, the fact that it didn't burn to the end, which was a necessary miracle, so the miracle continued the rest of the 7 days. Mele, now what we say is very nice. What was where did the nes come from? The no from the leftover, the remaining oil in the kankan, which was a necessity for the nes to continue. And because of that, why was there shmona, yamei shmona? It was yamei shmona only because of no sar kankanim, because it was leftover oil. But in no oil, nothing to chal on, so it wouldn't have been a miracle it wouldn't have the 8 day miracle. We talk about an 8 day miracle, because even the first day, so we said it was leftovers, there no sar kankanim. Shall have a Chanukah Sameach, shall be zoicha to a shefa of Torah this coming days, and be zoicha to the Gula Shlema, bimhira v'imenu.